I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Woohoo! It's finally here, a legit education resource designed for advanced practice providers. Yes, PAs, NPs, we've got you something just for you. Welcome to Dominate Surgery for APPs. This is a modern and engaging resource designed to teach APPs the art and the science of surgery. We go beyond rote memorization and focus on your performance. Learn how to present a consult, drive camera, tie a one-handed knot, and first assist in the OR. Dominate Surgery has it all. Concise text, custom illustrations, high-yield flashcards, super useful audio, and professional-grade video, all accessible on our app. The content really is good. It's useful, it's engaging, and it will make you better. Today, we have a podcast from our Dominate Surgery APP Master Educators. This crew is top-notch, and we know you're going to enjoy it. Remember, this is just a tiny fraction of the content from Dominate Surgery. With that, dominate the day.
Welcome back to Behind the Knife, and this podcast in our series for advanced practice providers. I'm Michael Johnson, a neurosurgery PA and PA educator at the George Washington University PA program. And today we're going to dig into the nitty-gritty about how to assist in the operating room. We all know the operating room can sometimes be an intense environment, and it's hard to find your place there at times, particularly when you're new or a trainee. You're on your surgery rotation and you want to make the most of every opportunity in the operating room. What can you do to stand out and be successful? Today, we'll be discussing the ins and outs of assisting in the operating room, best practices in general, and briefly touch on some of the robotic and laparoscopic tips that you won't want to miss. Joining me today are three distinguished guests who have a wide range of clinical, surgical, and educational experience and can offer their unique perspective about this topic. First up is Kim Howard. She's a thoracic surgery PA and also a PA educator at the Duke University PA program, where she oversees the surgical curriculum. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Great. Next up is John Messing, an experienced trauma nurse practitioner and trained RNFA, and is currently the APP Surgical Service Line Manager at the Inova Health System in Northern Virginia. John, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Mike.
Last but not least, we have a special guest with us today, Sarah Lovacek from Duke University. She has been a PA in surgery for 20 years. She started in neurosurgery, then moved to ortho, spent 12 years as a first assistant in the operating room, helping all kinds of specialties. She now works in urologic oncology and helps teach the surgical skills program at the Duke University PA program. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks for inviting me, Mike. I'm really excited to be a part of this.
Oh, excellent. Glad to have you here. Let's jump right in. Kim, when we talk about being a first assistant in the operating room, I imagine that preparation is similar for the overall preparation that we discussed in the tips and tricks episode. Is that accurate, really?
Yeah, for sure. The first thing I always tell new APP students is to know your anatomy. It sounds basic, but it's just so crucial to really study the anatomy specific to the case that you're going to be doing the next day so that you can be a good active participant. Understand not only the anatomy, but why that specific case is being done. you really want to understand like the surgeon's goal for the procedure, and this can make a huge difference in how effectively you assist.
Exactly, Kim. If you're the main assistant for a case, you have to prepare, just like described the night before, but you're also the main person to prepare for the surgery that morning in the OR. You always want to go to the OR early, have your films up and ready before the case starts. If you're responsible for admission order sets after the case, try to get organized and ahead of those on as well. Familiarize yourself with anything unique to the case or the patient. It really helps everything run smoothly. Another important part of setting up is supporting your surgeon, and it's usually a bit different for each one. Every surgeon has the way they like to do things, and they're right for their case. So know your surgeon's preferences, their preference cards, how they like their room set up. As you're new, if you're working with multiple surgeons, keep a running list to help keep it straight.
Oh, I agree. I really agree with this, Sarah. In my experience, first assisting is all about this preparation and anticipation. If you plan ahead, set up early, get your orders entered, and then when you have unanticipated things, which will happen, and you get a consult or a page, you won't get behind so easily. But, you know, back to first assisting, building on the general skills that help with all type of cases is what we're after next. Kim, what are some of the foundational principles that you teach when it comes to first assisting?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think one basic principle that we focus on and that we teach is the idea of tension and countertension. It's a key concept when you're assisting and when the surgeon is dissecting something. It can be really natural for some learners, but not all learners. So it's important to highlight it. When you apply those opposite forces, you really can help create a really nice plane in which the surgeon can dissect. We've all tried to use laparoscopic scissors when the tissue isn't being pulled tight, and it's just an exercise in futility.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great tip, and you know, an important principle. You know, learning how to, you know, just basic things about how to, you know, work with the tissue. John, what's another important principle that you would like people to keep in mind, regardless of the type of case?
So, sure to be ready for whatever the surgeon might need. Again, these are often simple things. For example, if you're not actively retracting or focusing on another job, you could be getting ready with the scissors if they're suturing so that you can cut the suture as instructed after they tie the knots. Another great thing to do, again, if you're not doing something else, is to offer a follow while your surgeon is suturing. And for the learners out there listening, you've probably noticed that when you're suturing with a long suture, the extra suture material can really get in your way. And a follow is when you hold the excess suture out of the way to minimize hassle for someone else. When they take their bite of tissue and start to pull the suture through, you let go to facilitate this, but then you re-grab the long suture on the other side to keep it out of their way. It's such a luxury when someone does this for me, and it's not just limited to the OR. As a trauma APP, believe me, when I'm in the trauma bay trying to close that LAC, this can be such a help.
That is a great tip.
I will also add that it's important to know when to stay out of the way. And I don't mean that negatively. It's something I've learned over the years. It's important to be ready with a cut or a follow, but also try to read the room and know if the surgeon just needs space to do what they're doing. If it's a small surgical area and everyone's leaning in, you might not be the one that needs to lean in the most because your head might obstruct the surgeon's view. So sometimes getting out of the way is also an important skill.
The great point, reading the room. And I think it's a through line in a lot of the discussions that we've had here. So great stuff about kind of general principles of assisting. We are going to zoom in, no pun intended, or maybe it is, zoom in on laparoscopic and robotic surgery. Now, Sarah, you have quite a bit of experience with these. Could you walk us through some of the importance of helping out in these types of surgeries?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing is when you're piloting the camera in a laparoscopic or a thoracoscopic case, your job is crucial. You're the surgeon's eyes, and this takes practice. It's a lot harder than it seems just driving a camera. The number one rule is to keep the horizon steady. You don't want to be moving so much that everyone in the room is getting seasick. That means knowing how to use your camera equipment properly, keeping the buttons towards the ceiling, understanding the equipment itself. Is this a 30-degree scope or a 0-degree scope? Is it a 5-millimeter or a 10-millimeter scope? These nuances can really affect how you position the camera. Know how to focus the camera, how to white balance, how to adjust the brightness, how to troubleshoot bad lenses versus light cords. All of these things will help make you a great first assist. Knowing when to zoom in and when to zoom out for a perspective is another key skill to try to master. And this will vary somewhat on surgeon preferences. I would also say that an important part of successful assisting with minimally invasive surgery is understanding how to bring the instruments into the field of view. And this is also sounds easy, but hard to do. It's important to use external cues. So if I'm bringing an instrument in and trying to go towards the liver, I might need to look outside of the screen at the actual patient's body and say, where is the liver anatomically? And then guide my instrument that way. You can also use the angle of the scope to guide the direction that you want to move your instrument. You don't want to surprise the surgeon by suddenly moving the camera and ruining their view because you need to find where your suction device is coming in. And you certainly don't want to hurt critical anatomy when you're bringing in sharp instruments like sutures or scissors because you can't find your instrument.
Sarah, that's so true. I can't count the number of times actually that a newer assistant or a student just couldn't find themselves on the camera because the stapler or the instrument was essentially perpendicular to the camera on the outside of the body. And I, if I'm piloting the camera, I try to zoom out to help, but it really does take practice. Also, you talked about bringing in the grasper, and that reminded me that anticipation is key here also. Like, if you know the next step is going to involve suturing, for example, then try to get your suture ready and get the tip of your grasper just like on the edge of the camera field so that you're ready with that next suture when the time comes. And then if you can find yourself ahead of time, you're just going to be that much more efficient.
Oh, yeah. And when it comes to bringing in the suture, do not be holding the actual needle to bring it in. It won't go through the trocar, or it'll get knocked out of your grasper, and now you've lost the suture needle in the body. Always grab it about an inch away from the needle and never change direction as you go through the trocar.
Oh, John, you are so right. There is nothing worse than losing a needle in the abdomen and then spending the next hour having to go look for it.
True. What about robotic first assisting specifically? Robotic surgery, you know, it's really becoming more popular in this standard of care in a lot of situations. What is it about having a good first assistant that can really help a surgeon kind of do this and develop their practice? Sarah, if you were precepting a student right now, what are some important things you would pass along about robotics?
That's a great point because I think the robot is here to stay and only going to get more popular. A lot of people are really intimidated by the robot. I mean, I certainly was when I first started. But if you get a solid understanding of the equipment and the buttons, it really just becomes a matter of practice. If you can play around with a robot before you're in a sterile operating room, definitely would advise you to take advantage of those opportunities. Docking the robot is essential to the whole case. So if we can dock the robot well, it will help the case go more smoothly. And there are various trainings for this, both in person and online. Students can research, but I teach these specific nuances when I have a patient in the OR with me. Okay, for starters, you want to make sure that your trocars are the correct depth in the patient. So these robotic trocars have a bold line, and that should be at the level of the fascia. That's an easy first step. Another step after you dock the robot is to look at the big numbers on the arms. Those should be spaced about a foot apart to avoid the arms from colliding. And you can even have a little more room on the fourth arm because that one's often a retractor. When we're bringing in the robot arm, you want to bring it in straight down to the trocar in the abdomen to dock it. But then, again, looking at that external anatomy like we talked about earlier, you really want to change the angle of the trocar when you bring the instrument in so it doesn't plunge down into the abdomen and damage the structure. Those are just some small things that you have to pay attention to. Practice, practice, practice. After you dock the robot, you'll do a little maneuver called burping the robot, and that'll help keep the right tension on the trocars. These are lots of tips and tricks, and I think, again, the more you get to practice, the more this will make sense. Know which arm is holding which instrument. So if the surgeon asks you to switch from arm 2, with has a scissor to arm 3, you want to know which instrument is in which hand so we don't take out the wrong instrument. And I think this is extremely important in surgery and probably even more important in robotic surgery is having that closed loop communication with the surgery team. So if I ever have a doubt, wait, do you want me to take this out of arm two? I should ask clarifying questions, because in robotic surgery, your surgeon is not at the bedside to directly observe you. And if you have a question, just ask. That closed loop communication will help keep everybody on the same team, keep the patient safe, and keep the surgery going smoothly.
That's just great stuff, Sarah. I'm going to shift gears a little bit because we're talking about APP students in the operating room, the surgery clerkships. But this is one of those times where PA training and NP training can diverge a little bit. Am I right about that, John? Could you teach us a little more about NP training as it pertains to surgery?
That's a great point, Mike, and thanks for bringing it up. Typically, NP students do not get robust OR exposure unless they actively seek out surgery rotation and pursue OR opportunities. If this is your first surgery rotation, really try to make the most of it. Ask your preceptor to connect you with the OR educator to learn OR etiquette and proper scrubbing, gowning, draping, etc. Getting these fundamentals out of the way allows you to focus more on the surgical skills you wish to learn. Now, an important thing to consider is the value of additional training as an RN first assist or RNFA, something that I did. I remember when I was an NP student taking call overnight and getting to assist in my first XLAP, the fellow looked at me and asked, "Have you ever scrubbed a case before?" And I nervously responded, "No, but I feel ready." He scoffed. He told me, "You know what? Just wash your hands twice and meet me in there." Fortunately, I knew how to at least scrub at that point. I just didn't go to the OR for a case. Once in the room, the circ nurses were fortunately very kind to me, and they guided me through the next steps. And believe me when I tell you, that's not always the case. Now, flash forward to graduating from school, working in trauma, starting to spend some more time in the OR, and I'm realizing I have a lot to learn. So I started reading about some RNFA programs, and I learned that the AORN was putting together a position statement for APRN, APRNs in the OR. This knowledge prompted me to pursue some additional training, and I'm happy I did. In 2016, the AORN's position statement came out saying that all APRNs should have formal first assist training if they wish to spend time in the OR. And of course, they put in a grandfather clause in there. Now, some organizations have fully adopted this position, while others have been okay with some on-the-job training. But I always tell people, do what's best for your training and for your patients by considering one of these programs. It's going to provide you some structure that'll strengthen your skill set while also avoiding a future where the training is mandated for it.
Thanks, John. Thanks for those insights. I think it's really important because, you know, we're doing the same job out there. We're taking care of patients. And I think it's important that we both know, you know, how we get there. And so going to move on, see if there's any final thoughts from this team about first assisting before we close. John?
The more opportunities you seek out as a student to assist, the more comfortable you're going to be. In doing so, you'll also find ways to add value in the OR. Learn to follow, track, suture, hand tie, use any downtime you can find to practice. If another student is in the OR first assisting already and nothing is happening elsewhere in the service, have a presence in the OR as an observer. It demonstrates engagement and interest, and people are going to notice. It's good for them.
Yeah, Mike, I would add that it's okay if you don't know everything at first. The more time you spend in the OR, the better an assistant you'll become if you're paying attention. When I first started, I would always ask the surgeons or just say to them, "Hey, I know that I've never helped you, so help me help you."
Oh, I love that.
Right? If they know that you're invested, they'll be more likely to teach and let you get involved. And it gives them an invitation to give you helpful feedback because they know that you care.
Sarah, I love that. I had never heard that before. I would add, Mike, that hands-on experience is really priceless. And so because of that, you have to sort of dive in. Like Sarah said, you know, the more you practice, the better you'll get. And you don't have to know everything to start. I think it's important not to get discouraged if you don't perform perfectly in the OR as well. Like, everyone was new at one point.
Absolutely. So I think we'll wrap here. Thanks, everybody. These just are just great insights from a really distinguished group. Great insights about first assisting, how to be a good part of the team and help out in the operating room. A big thank you to Kim, John, Sarah for sharing their expertise today. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in to Behind the Knife. Be sure to check out our other segments about APP education and surgery. Until next time, stay sharp and dominate.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.